Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you're on the most efficient way to get the show. You go to iTunes search engine, enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and the show pops right up. So I'm going to do a two-parter today. The two things I want to talk about is kind of the state of the game, where we are in the kickboxing world, what's going on. And then the other thing that I want to talk about is a blast down memory lane as I revisit the Super League kickboxing promotion and the good things that they did and the time period in which they came in, the importance of what Super League is. So go ahead and jump right into it. So if someone were to ask me, how is kickboxing doing right now? You know, how is what's going on? Is it big as it used to be, or is it, you know, not as big? Is what's going on? Like, kind of like just my perspective of it. And what I would answer is I would say kickboxing right now is extremely stable. You know, what I mean by that, it's there are consistent shows that are giving fighters the opportunity to compete. The thing that's going to be a struggle for getting people to understand that is the importance of the fight forum has gone down and it's been replaced by Twitter. And I think that for those of us who remember, you know, K1 fans, K1 USA, we went there and we had these really, really long conversations and we followed topics and people uploaded videos and downloaded videos and the feel of here comes a big fight event. I definitely feel like we had that better in the early 2000s. Like, the feel of it was much, much better. You know, so for example, I remember staying up extremely late and watching the, you know, a bad stream of the K1 World Grand Prix or K1 Max, whatever. Usually the Max was in delay for their stream, so I had to be careful or else I'd get those results quick. But the K1 World Grand Prix stream was up. Now, when I look back on it, I seem to recall that there were all these people interested in what was going on and following it. But in truth, the people who were up, like, watching with me on those streams, probably about, you know, 10, 12 people, something like that. And when I look at Twitter, I definitely see that amount, if not more, following the major kickboxing events now. So, but the difference is the perception. The kickboxing world seems so healthy. K1 fans, at one period of time, I remember the K1 did a event in Holland, and a lot of fans got together. And I remember a guy taking a picture of it, and he got seven people together. Just absolutely amazing, you know, that you would get that people who you never heard of together, and they met, and I just it was more than seven. I want to say it was probably about 12, but like the idea of it was still, we don't know each other, but we love kickboxing. Let's all go meet, you know. I think they met at some bar or something. They took a picture, and then they went and they enjoyed the show. The feel of that was different. The amount of people that were uploading and downloading, in particular downloading, because we all know about the Legers, it was different. Like, there was just, the feel was so much different. And I think that that's one of the things that people struggle to understand when they talk about what kickboxing is, where it is, and that feel, you know. That's usually why people say, man, kickboxing's down. So, for example, Gloria has just announced that Bada Hari is going to be fighting Rico Verheeven. For those of you who watched that event, or those of you who know it's coming, that night is going to feel like kickboxing is great. You know, like, it's, the Bada is still the biggest star in the sport internationally. He's the biggest draw. He can go all over Europe and a lot of people are going to come out. He can go to Japan and a lot of people are going to come out. He's still the biggest star. You know, I mean, he just is. So that feel is something that people want to have back. And when they don't feel it, they assume that the sport is gone. They look at the, you know, mixed martial arts and their ability to make stars and people that you get excited about and the next athlete coming around the corner. They feel like those guys have done a better job of preparing the next wave of, this is the next person that I'm excited about. But in truth, if you look at it right now, with the absence of some of their major stars, they too are in a spot where they're like, who's the next person going to be? I think for kickboxing, if you look at our sport as a whole, the talent is there. The heavyweight today is much more talented than the heavyweight of the 90s or of the early 2000s. And I say that without hesitation. What I mean by that is the ability to execute clean technique and, you know, put together offensive combos for kickboxing is far superior now than it was back in late 90s, early 2000s. Not that those guys weren't good, but there were people who could get away with just being hitters in the division. So Bernardo actually could be technical when he wanted to. But normally Bernardo was a killer, you know? Jerome LeBanner could be technical when he wanted to. But normally if he got you in trouble, he let his offense go. Not necessarily wild. I'm not saying that he was wild because he was crisp. I'm just saying he's an example of someone. LeBanner is his power. The power of those guys is way better than the power of our guys, for sure. So the hitters of that era are much better hitters than of this era. No questions asked. So if you're wondering where is the dynamic, that's where it is. But if you look at some of those K-1 World Grand Prix, if you look at some of those K-1 tournaments in the 90s, you look at the whole card, that whole card wasn't talented. You know, that whole card wasn't elite. But at the time, the importance of the game back then was to understand what is the value of a world championship? What is the value of a world title? And let's see who out of the world champions are the best. Because that's an important question to ask. Darren Parr said it best. When he was coming up in the game, he said, if you wanted to fight for a world title, you just had to go to the next state over and there was a guy who had a world title there. That's how many there were. That's how many organizations there are. That's how many people get behind you. So it's like when you hear the term world title, it should reflect the talent in the world. So when K1 came about, they were asking that question. And it was an important question for us to hear. We needed to know who the elite were, who the next person come around the corner was going to be, who's better out of these two guys. Well, you're a two-time world champion. You're undefeated. Well, my guy's undefeated. Let's see who's the best of those guys. You know, and quickly we found out Ernesto Hoos is the best of those guys. Peter Arts is the best of those guys. That is the purpose of what that was. So I think a lot of the excitement of the early age came with that connection. It came with the who's for real and who's not for real. Like, that is the importance of what the early generation had. They had the fight forums. They had the, excuse me, and by early generations, I'll say around the boom. Because in the 90s was also the Muay Thai boom in Thailand. So we had kickboxing events doing really well all over the place. Muay Thai events doing well, really well all over the place. Thailand going through just an explosion of success as far as the golden age of Muay Thai for them. And then going into the early 2000s with the internet age, giving way to the forum and giving people an opportunity to come together and really, really talk about, exchange, and learn in this game. And I told you guys myself, now what I could sit down and find on YouTube, back then you couldn't get it. You know, YouTube videos didn't go that long. So I would contact someone and say, hey, man, is there any way I can get some fights from you? A guy's like, yeah, man, I can do that. So I would pay him like 10 bucks a DVD, and I would be, you know, Christmas Day waiting for that to come in the mail. I remember one time I sent him like 100 bucks to send me like 10 different things, and all 10 of them were worth it. And I still have them. I saw the other day, I was going through some old CDs. I still have those things. So that feel, that you know, excitement that I had when I was learning the game and I had a platform to sit down and learn more was much bigger in that age. The thing that we have now is we have very talented guys and a lot more opportunities for them to make money, you know. So Glory Kickboxing is stable. There was a period of time where it wasn't stable, but now it's stable, you know. And now it's doing consistent shows. You know, they do more shows in a year than K1 did in their best years. Like, people don't realize that. Even if you add the year with the max events, we're talking there were 4 max events, and then there were 4 heavyweight events. You're talking 8. Glory Kickboxing regularly does more than that. You know, they usually try to, you know, do, you know, 15, 16, something like that a year, 15, 14, if you will. But they do more events. They have more weight classes, much more stability. And you're going to talk about it with Super League. When I bring that up, one of the importance of Super League is they're one of the first ones to have multiple weight classes. And I look at where the golden age of kickboxing, if you will, you had people who were trying to be in one of 2 weight classes. they wanted to be a heavyweight or they wanted to be a Max Division guy. Max Division literally created for one guy, Masato. Other people came along, but that was he was the tryout. They gave him a single fight, did well in the single fight on a K-1 heavyweight event. They were like, this is the guy to run with. And they were right. You know, it's funny when things like that happen. In professional wrestling, there's a wrestler named Okada, and he's probably considered the best in the world. But the guy who was running the New Japan organization at that time, he banked on, I believe this guy could be my Hulk Hogan-esque, type hero. Someone that is a great, great competitor that everybody gets behind. This is my guy. I'm all in on this guy. And it turned out to be extremely successful, and Okada is having one of the great wrestling runs of all time. You look at that, you look at that angle, you look at that individual and what they've become and what they're doing, and kickboxing did that a while ago with Masato to great success. Once that happened, people who weighed below that weight or people who weighed above that weight knew that's the weight you got to get to. So there's a great one in that kickboxing documentary where Shane Chapman is getting ready to go against Jiang Wang Park, and they're out running, and they recognize each other because they both fought in the Oceania area. And then Shane, they're smiling. They go, he goes, "Yeah, I got a couple more kilos to go." And Shane says, "Yeah, 70's just out of my jurisdiction, but for the K1 money, for the K1 opportunity, more than importantly, he did it. Like he'll get that weight off." Weighed in, on point like he was supposed to. Didn't perform to the level that I know he wanted to, but, he did it. It was important for him to sit down and do it. So I look at that, and I look at where, kickboxing is now. Our guys don't have that problem as much. Sure, weight cutting comes into play with every combat sport, but because there are more options, somebody who fights at 170 pounds or 77 kgs, they're not thinking, I've got to starve myself down to 70 because that's where the opportunity is. And some people did it. Yuri Mess, I remember talking to him at a fighting event, and I remember Yuri Mess saying, I am going to, I brought up K1, and he goes, that's where the real money is. That's where the real opportunity is. And he ended up making it later in his career, and he went down to 70 kgs, lost to Andy Sauer. But his resume, I think he got a fight after that, but his resume and his management was enough to get him that opportunity in Japan. He had some wins and some losses, but he got it. For the rest of his life, he's got that on his resume. So shout out to Yuri Mess. But the importance of it was he is a guy who once upon a time was the best guy at 77 kgs, and he thought, I've got to get smaller so I can get that opportunity. Now you don't have to do that. You know what I'm saying? Glory's got you until you're into the smallest of weight classes. But for the most part, 143, 65 kgs around there, 70 kgs, 154, 170, 77 kgs, 187, 85 kgs. And then we have a light heavyweight, which we didn't have before. That's new to kickboxing in general, outside of it, Showtime. I would credit it Showtime for having the weight class. Super League had it, but they really didn't have an active roster competing. And I believe theirs was 91 kgs, which isn't that big. But at least it's documented that they had it. But I don't have a lot of history or great fighters that fought around that weight class. And then K1 actually did a K2 and K3 tournament. Ernesto Hoos winning the K2 tournament because he was about 197 pounds when he fought in the first heavyweight title, so he was a smaller guy. The first heavyweight K1 World Grand Prix, he was smaller when he did it, and he put on more weight as he went along, so definitely credit to him. And then they did K3, which was won by Ivan Hippolyte. So there were attempts throughout the years, but nothing consistent came in those early days until you had the Max, which gave you two options as opposed to your one option. I look at that era, and then I look at Super League. They were the only ones trying to fill that gap between those weight classes and, in some cases, go a little bit lower. And then it's Showtime, of course, as they developed a little bit more success. They, too, had that multiple weight classes and multiple champions and multiple people to watch throughout. In particular, they did the smaller weight classes of 60 kgs. So I remember Sergio Wilson was their champion at one period of time. Javier Hernandez was their champion at one period of time. So they had a good run. They really did have a good run and a lot of good athletes that competed, you know, for them around that weight class. So they really did do good things, but those weren't consistent, and the organizations came and went. What we need now, or what the kickboxing sport needs now, is or what it needed when it ran into its, you know, its low point, was it realized that it relied so much on the bigger organizations, so much on the Max and so much on the heavyweights, that when they ran into trouble, when they had the when they ran into trouble, when they ran into the financial difficulties and so on, they didn't have multiple stars to look to get them through the hard times. They just had one, you know, or they just had the heavyweights, or they banked on that doing it. And when they weren't able to have the success that sustained afterwards, that's what ran us into our bad time. Now I would say that the model is much more sustained because of the options out there. So Kunlun, the people who fight for Kunlun are consistently, they're getting good checks, they're fighting in China, they're getting high-level opportunities. Glory, same thing. One that's coming around. These organizations are doing multiple weight classes. And now I'm starting to see things that I never saw before. So Stamp Fairtex, the champion for the women, I believe it's around 110 pounds, 108 pounds. I could be wrong on what that is for one championships. I am seeing a list of girls pop up and want that opportunity. You know, like that's, you know, there's been some good fights. There's been some good opportunities. And women at that weight class are like, I want to get that opportunity. I want to fight this girl. Never happened in a million years before. Anissa Mexen, of course, making a great resume and glory. And there are girls who want to get good enough to have that opportunity. Never happened before in my history of knowing kickboxing. Back in those days, it was one elite girl that beat up all the girls in her area. And if she was too good or she's winning by KO, nobody wanted to fight that girl. So that's what happened with Jorin Durandami. Like, she was just that tough, you know. And Julie Kitchen, she was dominant, but she was dominant in a different way. She kind of won with the clinch. So it was just a different presentation, but the things were the same. Like, she really, really was a talented fighter who dominated for a while. And then you go to a Yonka Alma, like, just dominated like no other in her area. Like, she was a killer. And then, of course, you'll see a Riker. There's always that one dominant girl, but no consistent, healthy weight class. Now we have it. We've got multiple organizations that have consistent weight classes for the women, which is new. And that's really, really important to have. The next thing, of course, you've got to talk about is star power. Rico Verheeven, I remember there was a joke that he was a prince, and now they call him the king. He really, really is important to kickboxing. He is a recognizable figure who, the only thing missing from his resume is that he didn't fight in K1 at one period of time. It would have been cool to have that and then to bring that over to the highest level. I first saw Rico fight when he was a B-class guy, and he was on the undercard of a It's Showtime event, like super, super undercard. They ran out some guys, and me and Simon Roots actually joked about this in my documentary. He said that he's never had a card that had 24 fights, and I was like, I was there, I counted them all. And I think he just didn't include those kind of opener B-class fights. There was pretty much no one there except for us junkies. So maybe 80 people in the crowd saw that fight, but I don't care. I was one of the 80. And Rico started there, but that wasn't what we would call the K1 broadcast, like how Tyrone Spong got to be in K1 at the end of their run. We really needed something like that. That would be the only thing missing from his resume, I should say, that would keep him from being the elite star, because he'd have a piece of the old while still being the new. But he would have had to been there and there at like 18 in order for that to happen. But other than that, he's going out there, he's winning consistently, he's got the stoppages, he's got the style, he represents the sport highly. People, I remember they laughed at the fight that he had with Bigfoot Silva, but in the history of kickboxing, we've got those fights. You know what I'm saying? We've got a Rumi Bonjowski Akebono KO. You know, like there is something to going against someone from another organization or another combat sports and just kind of showing the might of kickboxing. And Rico had a fight to do that. So it's important to have that in his resume. So I definitely think Rico is the guy to follow. Murat Gregorian, now that he is the champion, he's got both Superbon and Sitichai on his resume. And that's very important. So not only is he one of the, you know, best guys in the world in that weight class, he's got victories over elite ties. And that was one of the arguments that people had about, you know, Glory, for example, that the Thai style wasn't given a fair opportunity and that some guys weren't scoring fights right and that kind of stuff. But he stopped Superbond and he beat Sitichai clear in their last fight. It's very, very important that he has this on his resume. Like, it's huge. So you have a star that has the legitimacy of those wins, and that's very important. Now you just got to build the brand. You know, now that he's champion, they got to build the brand. And he's, of course, he's got to do his role in it and having success. But the build the brand part is not just the Glory Showcase. It is the fighter getting wins in a way where people want to see him. Murat Gregorian, Horat Gregorian, both of those two gentlemen are all action. You know, Jeff Johnson, all action. We've got the athletes out there that have the fight style. So when people get a view of these guys, they got to be in love with what they're seeing. Because I really, really do believe that that is that in 70 kgs, always historically really, really good. But 77 kgs in the world right now is phenomenal. There's a lot of good fights. There's a lot of good fighters. Cedric Doumbé, you guys heard me go on and on about him. He is creating his resume as we speak as being one of the all-time greats. Again, that's not something that I throw out there because I want people to usually be towards the end of their career where I put, you know, put them in their, you know, a all-time great status. I am just saying that at this stage in the game, who he's beat, the fights that he's avenged, and how he's won by stoppage, he has really, really put himself in position to be one of the guys that you talk about 10 years, 15 years down the road. In the way that people look back and say, you know, Peter Arts was blank, that's what you're going to say about Cedric Doumbé as this thing keeps going. And it's important that we have those guys. And it's important that that guy would not be the same if he'd been just as good in the 2000s because he wouldn't have had a weight class. He is made special by this era. And that's one of the things that in today's state of the game, that's possible. The best fighter, you know, one of the best fighters on the planet or one of the most recognizable fighters on the planet has the interview ability in both languages, wanted to be a comedian at one period of time, knows how to sell himself, knows how to, everything about him is just charisma and watch this guy, watch this guy. And when I first saw that he was, because he's fought in the States a couple times, when he came and he fought Alan Shanson in New York, everything about his entrance and just being there, I go, this dude is something different. This is not just a good fighter. And it can't be taught. It cannot be taught. It's something that you've got to be born with. It's an ability that it's, if anybody could bottle and sell it, every promoter in the world would use it. It's just not the case. He was born with that ability. So Cedric Doumbé is one of the main stars of this era. He is made possible by this era. Definitely got to credit France right now. Glory does a lot of events there. France does a lot of events on their own, and they're starting to consistently produce high-level kickboxers and kickboxing action. And this is from a country that was mainly full rules Muay Thai. Most of their legends, Fabio Pinca, you know, Johan Ladon, the style of those guys is very much full rules Muay Thai. But they're starting to produce some really good kickboxers, and that's important. China, we've talked about China before. In a very short period of time, China went from non-existent kickboxing to one of the places that people want to go to witness kickboxing in the world. It's just crazy, the dynamic and the change of that. So definitely good there. You can't talk about K1 without talking about the state of Japan. And Japan kickboxing is doing extremely well right now. They are run by three superstars. I'll go ahead and say four. I'll say three superstars, one super talent. Masaki Nori is a super talent. He's a guy who can fight and win and beat anybody in the world. Every once in a while, he'll have a lapse. But for the most part, he has got the best resume, I'd say, one of the best resumes of any Japanese fighter as far as how they did with international opposition and how they did with the better fighters in Japan. He's got that, you know, guy who I've been following since he was 15, 14 years old. Of course, you guys know, I always, you know, he's one of my kids. He is one of those guys who, for the longest period of time, he's someone to watch. And he is an awesome, entertaining, competitive, you know, fighter who gives the legitimacy because he's done the international and he's got the international wins, both by his glory run and his K-1 run. And he went to France a couple times just to take some fights. So shout out to Masaki Nori going against the best and leaving the safeties of home to do so. So he's the elite talent. And then the elite prospect, of course, is Takai, who ran through a tournament and almost, you know, pretty much three rounds of total works to beat three guys. Super talent, getting stoppages. He's got that Ed appeal, like he fights in a way that the crowd wants to see. He's very, very important. And then, of course, you've got the big two, and Takuru and Tenzin Nasukawa. All things lead toward those guys fighting on New Year's Eve card or something like that, and it's going to be the biggest fight in the history of Japanese kickboxing. I think that it will... There are times where Japan tried to do it, and it didn't work out. So you got Satake and his fight with Musashi. I think that there was an idea that these two Japanese guys are going to get together, and they're going to put together the greatest fight. You know, they had the media behind it, and they made a big deal out of it. But they were the greatest fighters for the weight class. Like, nobody felt that way about them. When Tenzin Nasukawa and Takuru fight, you got to get a big stadium. They could probably do that in the Tokyo Dome. If they did that early enough, if they started early enough in the year, you know, if they started promoting it, if they announced it tomorrow and said, we're doing this, and, you know, to Tokyo Dome in December, it's done. That is the fight. Like, that is the fight that everyone wants to see. It is one of the great fights out there that can be made. You know, that's a great fight that can be made. If Tyrone Spong came back and fought Rico Verhoeven, that's a great fight. You can really count on your hands how many great fights that there are, all-time great fights that can be had, but you're supposed to be that way. It shouldn't be you. There are 17 fights that if we made right now, they'd be the greatest ever. No, that should never be it. It should be a rare thing that this person is fighting this person. That's what creates a super fight. Now, again, beating a champion, pulling off upsets, winning a title, all that stuff is what carries your sport from month to month, week to week, year to year. That's the important stuff. But every once in a while, there's got to be that fight that comes around where everybody's like, I want to see that, you know? And in boxing, like, people talk about Crawford and Errol Spence fighting one day. And everybody who talks about it's like, I want to see that. You know, like, that's, it's got that feel. I want to see that. So I look at the kickboxing landscape, and I see that we just have a couple of those fights, and that's absolutely perfect. That's what it is. It's supposed to just be a couple. And 5-6 years down the road, there should be another couple. But the game should always be in that place. So as a finale, as a wrap-up, the state of kickboxing, I would say, if having to give a letter grade, would be B minus right now. If I, you know, if I had to go F through A, I'd say B minus. I think A is weird. I don't know if I've ever say that kickboxing was an A. Maybe it was an A in terms of popularity, but in terms of opportunity, I'll never say that it was an A. There are much more opportunities now than when it was in its prime. I do think that if I went region to region, I can make arguments there. So definitely Thailand in, you know, the 90s was an A. They guys got paid the most, or paid a lot of money. They didn't value the clinch style as much as they like clean, effective scoring. It was probably an A in that era. Right now, its era still is solid. They still have really good fighters. They're still producing really, really good guys. And the Thailand scene, a lot more of those guys are going out there and daring themselves in the international market. Yod Wicha could have been in Thailand his whole career if he'd started in the early 2000s. But good management and opportunities means after winning Fighter of the Year, he was able to go out and get some other opportunities, you know? Just there are plus one championships signing up a lot of the guys who, you know, were champions, you know, Orno, and just they're looking to build their brand on some of those great guys. And that's cool. You know, like Nongo, like they're finding those guys and they're using them on a big platform. That's all really, really cool to see. And I think that that's good for the growth of the sport, for keeping, you know, Thailand relevant in a different way, because it's tough for people to follow the stadium fighting. And I do a podcast, and it's tough for me to follow the stadium fighting. You know, I just don't have as much time as I used to when I first did this podcast. But to see that those guys who are now great in Thailand leave and get more international opportunities as managers get better, bigger, and have more success, it just means that the world can see how talented these guys are, because they're only going to know when they see them go against a Western guy. And people from Thailand or people who listen to this podcast who are pro, you know, stadium, they would have to admit that I'm 100% true. No one appreciates what stadium fighting is, because usually it's elite Thai versus elite Thai. So unless you're a hardcore junkie that sits down, finds the fights, watch the fights, that's your only way that you're ever going to know who these people are and know how to follow them and know that they defend their title once a month. Like, that's the only way to ever find out, you know, to understand things about rivalry. San Chai, as great as he is known more for his videos, his sparring videos, and for his international fights than he ever will be for his Thai stadium fights. And he's a great Thai stadium fighter. He was Fighter of the Year in 1999, and then he did it again 12, 13 years later. That should be impossible, you know what I'm saying? But he did it. You know, he's one of the two-time winners. That sort of thing is only appreciated when they see him do a video where he does a handstand kick and knocks a guy out, or he does a jumping inside leg kick, or he clowns somebody with a bunch of sweeps and so on. I always joke about it, because he went to do a seminar in Minnesota, and Cool Lee, the Glory Fighter, they did a round together where they were like, you know, place sparring and so on. And it was good, fun, back and forth. Cool had a lot of enjoyment in it and so on. And then next they brought in a guy, and Sanchai absolutely schooled the guy. Which one do you think made the video on his Instagram page? The one where the guy got schooled. So, like, that kind of stuff is always going to be, it's funny, but it's also promoting and marketing yourself. And that's why Sanchai is considered what he is. He's an all-time great guy who stoppages and kickboxing skill matter. His style matters. His charisma matters. The thing that they even showed this video where, you know, he's joking in the corner where he's, like, getting water for the fighter and he keeps spitting on the other cornerman because they know they're going to win. Stuff like that adds to the lure of him, and none of it has anything to do with his stadium resume. It isn't fair. I'm just saying it's true. I'm saying people are known more for their international run. And in today's day and age, those elite stadium fighters, you know, those guys are giving, you know, just, you know, even Muay Thai, just, I saw just signed with one championship. The opportunity for them to fight international is letting the world see how skilled they are. And that's very, very important. Don't discount that. That is very important. And right now we have it. And back then they didn't have it as much. So look at that as a thing that shows the health of kickboxing and Muay Thai. Look at the amount of people who are sticking with it. You know, in America, the theme is when you become good at kickboxing, you win a world championship. Oh, let's see how this guy would do in MMA. That's kind of how everybody feels about it. But because there's more opportunity, people who just want to kickbox, they're staying kickboxing. You know what I'm saying? Kerry Allen, who does Full Rules Muay Thai, moved from Kansas to Thailand. You know, married a Thai woman. He's got a baby out there competing consistently. He's chasing it full. TJ Johnson out there chasing it full. American guys building their resume in Thailand. The IFMA Games giving so much. There was no IFMA Games in the early 2000s. Like, that's a new creation. Like, that's something that happened right around the time when they were trying to figure out when are we going to, as far as the hugeness of it. I'm not talking about the actual year in which it started. I'm talking about IFMA didn't become a thing for people to get excited about and follow until the late 2000s, early, late 2008, 9, 10, early 11, 12, you know, that was the period of time where that became a thing. So it really was something that I think that people don't understand, but they see all the time now. But that is a product of today's day and age, and it really should give credit. So high-level amateur, not so, or AmiPro, I should call it, opportunities, that's a big one. Again, I used to be against it at first because I didn't like the idea of Artem Levin getting a victory over Jotunklai with headgear and shin guards. That just bothered me, you know, when they first started to emerge, and I believe that was 2008 or 9 that fight happened. But anyways, moving forward, I look at that era, I look at those guys, I look at those athletes, I look at the styles that are emergent, the Russian style of the openness and the switch stance and the boxing and both stance, the Thai style, how it's working in high-level kickboxing. We are still missing that banger. We don't have a consistent heavyweight banger, but, you know, time will come. You know, that time will tell. There's always going to be a guy who punches hard coming around the corner, so there's a really, really good chance that we find that guy eventually. But right now, the focus of this game is very much about your glory kickboxing champion, your one championship. They are kind of cultivating new stars, but really holding on to old stars, using Jotunklai in their 70kg tournament. Petrosian, of course, I commented at length about that situation where he was out of the tournament and then back into the tournament. But he's still an old star who's got that K1 brand on him. So people will pay attention just because. This wouldn't have been a big deal if we were talking about Joe Nottawatt and, you know, the guy who he fought, which just shows how much I remember that fight. It's not that kind of a situation. This is very much a situation where the best fighter in the world are considered the greatest kickboxer of all time, in particular for his weight class. This guy has to keep fighting. Tournament thing didn't work out his way. Had a loss. Things have changed. He's back in the tournament. He's back winning. As much as that sounds bogus, I mean, 100% understand why they had to do it that way. So, you know, but Petrosian's still out there doing it. Jotunklai will probably still make money in super fights, even though he's out of the tournament. You know, I talked about what they're doing with the women's weight classes there. Glory, you know, everybody knows that I help in the talent ops department for Glory Kickboxing. Consistent shows from them. We've got the Big Bader Hari versus Rico Verheeven part 2 coming up in December. That card's going to be a super card. The things that are going on in the kickboxing world right now are very exciting, and I want to see more. I'm glad that there are a lot of people doing consistent kickboxing events. MMA events are starting to put on kickboxing fights because really good MMA fighters with good records don't want to fight each other because they want to have the opportunity to move on to MMA down the road or to UFC. But they will go against someone tough in kickboxing. So, because they like having those athletes on their cards, people are giving kickboxing a chance. And they're using it, and some of them are falling in love with it and saying, this is what I want to do. So, we really want to make sure that we keep cultivating the sport and keep developing new stars because we really do have a good platform for people to make it in kickboxing. Just understand it in that way, and then follow the people on Twitter. You know, follow, you know, your Grabaka Hitmans, follow your Kixies, you know, follow those guys who are like, you know, the huge, you know, not just guys who are really, really good about, you know, fight streams and stuff like that. Clearly we want to follow those guys because they give you quick action. But because of today's day and age, KOs are seen a billion times more than they were seen back in our day. You know, because they've got those quick, here's a video of what just happened. If Pacquiao wins by knockout this weekend, I don't have to get the pay-per-view. I can just look at Twitter. You know what I'm saying? It's going to pop up. That's kind of where the game is. The eyes that see our great kickboxing, our great KOs, there's much more of them right now than there has ever been. So definitely be a part of what is the sport that I love, you know, and I really enjoy kickboxing, and I'm grateful for anybody who puts the time in to watch the elites do what they do. So I spent 40 minutes talking about the state of the game. I will go ahead and call it there. Next week, I'll do the Super League thing. I've got all my notes and stuff in front of me, but I was like, man, this show will fool around and be 2 hours if I do that. So, but yeah, that's kind of what my goal is. You know, I want people to, you know, be part of the sport, follow it. Definitely, as I mentioned before, you know, Coach Sean Madden and just the various people who hit up Combat Press. They, you know, they've been putting my podcast up, but they are probably one of the best of doing results all over the world. Infusion is the only brand that I would say took a hit in terms of its the eyes that see the product, because they chose to change their online platform from you could watch all of their shows to having a monthly membership. When that changed, that meant not as many people watch their fights and not as many videos of their fights get out there. But, you know, they're still doing consistent shows and they're still creating stars. Typhoon Oskin, still one of the best fighters on the planet, and, you know, he fights for them. And Andy Semelier, same thing, a super, super talent, you know. So the talent is out there. You know, we just got to make sure that we are paying attention to the sport as a whole. And then that way you can get behind the next generation coming up. And in glory, you can get behind your Hamichas and your Troy Joneses and, you know, and your Ace of Ten Pals. And, you know, like just there are so many next generation guys coming around the corner in the sport all the time for every organization. So be a platform that can get out there. I would love nothing better than if Infusion fooled around and got on Fight Pass. I would love it. You know why? Because I've got Fight Pass. I want to see these guys on a high level, on a high platform. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Shout out to also Rosie Hayward. I saw that she's back on social media. Rosie was one of the biggest advocates for pushing female Muay Thai and kickboxing. She left the social media game for a while, so shout out to her for coming back. Shout out to all the guys who are consistently putting up streams, and I know I'm missing a lot of names. You know, Chris Decker, who does a good job of doing MMA reporting and asking questions and just getting kickboxing out there. Even though his tagline is Chris Decker MMA, he's one of the main guys who's looking for kickboxing events, talking about them, watching them, tweeting on them. Like, really, really get behind these guys. So I will go ahead and wrap the show up. I feel like I'm forgetting a bunch of names, and that's making me feel horrible. But for all the people who are doing a great job of getting kickboxing out there, the people who are putting in the work, who's following the events, who are streaming and talking about it, thank you all. And definitely get behind this game and support it heavily. I am at Steven the Warman on Instagram and on Twitter. I'm going to watch everything kickboxing, so you'll always see me tweet on it. And I want people to know about events, know about athletes. And if I get a clip or if I see something online, I'm usually going to respond to it. I'm also going to respond to boxing, MMA, kickboxing, and wrestling because I like them, and football because I like them. But I want you guys, if you can, pay attention, follow those kickboxing events that I post, and then follow the people who I'm posting about so that they can get more views and they can keep putting up content. This is a sport that we who love it have got to do the things that it takes to push it. So thanks, everybody, for listening. God bless, and you guys have a good one. Peace.